Susie 103.4.
I'm here with David Jay, and we're going to be chatting about everything going on, all the different events that have taken place this week. Good afternoon, David.
Good afternoon, Tim, and good afternoon to all our Susie listeners on a day when so much has changed since I was sitting in this studio at 4 o'clock on Thursday afternoon. That's not yet 48 hours ago, and so much has changed.
Yes, it's amazing how quickly things have changed. When the coverage of the Queen being ill on around about lunchtime started to come onto the television, I sense an inevitability about what was going on, and listened to your show, and I know you were very positive during the show about the Queen's condition. I think once the journalists started to put on black ties and black suits, I think we probably knew where things were heading. Nicholas Witchell was very sombre during that particular period, but yes, it's amazing how quickly things change.
I think the first thing that I would like to offer is gratitude for the fact that Her Late Majesty lived so long, lived to the age of 96, and I'm sure that there will be some Republicans, perhaps some lingering supporters of the late Diana, Princess of Wales, but with all due humility, as far as I can see, the Queen never put a foot wrong through the whole of my lifetime. You refer to Thursday afternoon, which was a quite surreal experience. It was a pure musical coincidence. I'm sure we will chat later on about the sandpit removing to a new venue and about the stroll being about to come from Levi's cat basket. But the fact of the matter was that everything I'd prepared for Thursday afternoon was predicated on that move. There was a sense of farewell in the music because Levi and I were off to contribute to this new project which Susie Radio is about to get underway. And I think that you can very easily dwell on the suddenness of what happened, particularly given the audiences that Her Late Majesty had granted just 2 days before to Boris Johnson and Liz Truss. And I suppose the suddenness, let's face it, you gave me a heads up just as I was leaving home by text, and that would have been just about 1 o'clock, and the announcement of Her Late Majesty's death came at 6:30. I was actually sitting upstairs in the study. I'd just been listening back to the show to see how it had all gone under these rather strange circumstances. The TV was on downstairs, and I'd literally just signed off the edit that I'd done. And I just heard the one word. I heard Hugh Edwards downstairs say, died.
Yeah.
And that was one of those moments. We've all had a few in our lives. Mm. And I certainly won't ever forget that moment. And I suppose the thing that we should be grateful for in amongst all the grief and sadness is the suddenness and the fact that clearly Her Majesty neither lingered nor could have suffered very much.
No, and it is incredible. I know we've talked about it before, but it's incredible that to the very end almost she was still carrying out her duty, and Boris Johnson made a... during his speech in Parliament yesterday, he said the Queen saw off her 14th Prime Minister, which I thought was a nice way of putting it. And then there's those pictures of the Queen with Liz Truss. And, you know, even at that point, yes, she looked frail. She was 96 then. But there was no sort of hint that we were on the verge of this momentous change. And incredible that clearly at the time, the Queen... very strong woman, but you know, at 96, clearly there things were starting to overtake her. She was still able to undertake that duty with a smile, and fulfilling that duty to the very end. And I know Boris Johnson called her Elizabeth the Great. I saw one of the other commentators mention her as Elizabeth the Dutiful, and I think both of those titles, if you like, are very appropriate for her with the way that she lived her life.
And not that I'm accusing you, but it's very difficult, isn't it, to deal with this without resorting to cliché.
Yeah.
And clearly, dutiful, Her Majesty's sense of duty was just one of the myriad, if I may use the word, of defining elements regarding her character and her longevity and her constancy. I suppose somewhere inside me there is the sense that the Queen really did pretty well to survive the death of the Duke of Edinburgh by 17 months. I know that your mum said something about that. In terms of your mum's view that the Queen probably in the end died of a broken heart, in the way that we suspect that her sister Princess Margaret all those years ago in the end suffered something of the same after Peter Townsend and what went on at the very beginning of the Queen's reign, let's face it, that's 70 years ago now. You refer to those images. I suspect that the images we saw of the audiences last Tuesday were in their way quite reassuring. That's why what happened next was so unexpected. But clearly those images did reflect an increasing frailty in the Queen's constitution. I don't think there's any doubt about that. And the other image which sticks in my mind, Tim, is the image from, as I say, 17 months ago, when, because of the COVID restrictions, Her Majesty was left sitting on her own, looking directly at her late husband's coffin, there on her own in that pew in St. George's Chapel. And I think that those, to me, are the defining images of the end of her life, along with the two appearances on the balcony at Buckingham Palace during the Platinum Jubilee. Now, I don't know a great deal about frailty in extreme old age. I've only really one experience of my own to draw on, but I suspect that towards the end, and this refers back both to the balcony on Buckingham Palace and also to the images from last Tuesday, I suspect that Her Majesty, right towards the end, was able to raise herself once, but then not twice. The Privy Council meeting was cancelled for the day after she saw the outgoing and incoming prime ministers. And I think she managed to do that in the same way that she managed to fly through her first appearance on the balcony at the Platinum Jubilee. But the second time around, when she came at the end of the proceedings in that lime green coat, I felt somehow that she almost looked bewildered and incredibly frail compared with the radiance of 4 days before. And I suspect that what has happened this week saw absolutely no second time for her to revive, if you like.
And it's interesting, isn't it, that when we heard the news that the new Prime Minister was going to be taken to Balmoral rather than the Queen flying back down to Buckingham Palace, and the media said that she wasn't well enough to come back down to Buckingham Palace, in hindsight now we can see why that was the case. And you know, you at the time you thought, okay, that's just a precaution that they're taking, and at 96 you can understand why she doesn't really need to be shuttling between Scotland and London without real need, but now in hindsight we can see why. And you know, the fact is she was able, as you quite rightly say, to summon that strength to fulfil her duty, what probably maybe in her own mind she knew it would be the last time that that would be required. But we're talking 24, 48 hours later that she passed away. Incredible. Absolutely incredible.
The whole week has been quite extraordinary. I don't think surreal is the wrong word. It's been completely surreal. And something that struck me, watching the pre-recorded tribute last night on the BBC and all those retrospectives, something that struck me is the poignant contrast between all of those images of the young queen, her engagement, her wedding, the coronation, the formal photographs after that, and the contrast with that frail figure. The St. George's Chapel image is haunting somehow, because it's almost as though below the brim of her hat and above the mask that she was wearing, Her Majesty was almost peering through that gap. Really quite extraordinary, and such a contrast that I fear, as it must have done with the king, there's a reminder in those images, Tim, of our own mortality.
Yes, definitely.
Will you allow me one of a few poems that I've put together for today? This is Ernest Dowson, inspired by a phrase from the classical Latin poet Horace, and the title, I won't give you the Latin title, "The Brief Sum of Life Forbids Us the Hope of Enduring Long." And Ernest Dowson wrote these words: "They are not long, the weeping and the laughter, love and desire and hate. I think they have no portion in us after we pass the gate. They are not long, the days of wine and roses. Out of a misty dream our path emerges for a while, then closes within a dream."
Now, David, we were chatting just now and discussing various things that have happened this week, and you referenced the Queen during Prince Philip's funeral, and I thought it's very telling that, as you mentioned to me earlier on, the Queen was given the option during that funeral of lifting the restrictions at the time, but she decided to keep them in place, as much as it must have been heartbreaking for her and very difficult for the family. She didn't want to be seen to be any different to the rest of us who were suffering during that particular period. And I think that really summed up why she was so important to the country. And when she did that address to the nation, where she talked about meeting again, they've been playing that the last couple of days, and I don't think you can watch that without feeling a lump in your throat. And I think it just summed her up, and how she was so connected to everybody in the country.
And she was the only person who could have done that, because she was there when Vera Lynn was singing "We'll Meet Again" for the first time.
Yeah.
She was a 16-year-old colonel of the Coldstream Guards, if I've got that right. I may not be right about that, but she was the colonel of a regiment. She'd already been on air with her sister, broadcasting to the children under the circumstances of the Second World War, and she was clearly at that stage revered as a princess and as the heir to the throne. You refer to duty, and I think that the scene in St. George's Chapel and the fact that what was good enough for her people was going to be good enough for her refers back to that whole sense of duty that she had. As I said just now, it's very difficult not to talk in clichés. A lot of people talked about her constancy, and clearly an element of that. There was a hugely touching tweet, I don't know whether it must have been yesterday that I saw it. I think a soldier, or possibly a member of the police, had tweeted about the moment when he received the message, "London Bridge has fallen down." And Operation London Bridge clearly was the operation that kicked into motion the moment that Her Majesty died. So it's difficult not to talk in clichés, I think. Hugh Edwards used the word seismic about the change that was literally happening before our eyes on his television news bulletin. I've struggled to find a different image, or one that I don't think has been used in the media, apart from perhaps not just change, but tectonic plates shifting. Because to my generation, and quite honestly to anybody, let's say in 1952 when the king died, anybody who was 10 years old might have been able to appreciate what was going on. So you're talking about anybody who is 81 or 82 and younger. The Queen has always been there for their entire lives. Not perhaps an immediate presence as a member of the family might be, but she has always been there. And somebody said that means that whether we're boomers or millennials or Generation X or Generation Z or today's children, we are all Elizabethans.
Yes, that's right.
And that makes a lot of sense to me. And when I said that she has always been there, I have a very strong sense that even though more remotely, as a spirit rather than a person in the real world, not only has Her Late Majesty always been there, but I think in our minds and in our hearts, she always still will be.
Yes.
Can I give you a second verse?
Sure. Yes, please.
This was Philip Larkin at the time of the Silver Jubilee. In times when nothing stood, but worsened or grew strange, there was one constant good. She did not change. And at that point, there were another 45 years to go.
David Jay, myself, Tim Bowling here till 1 o'clock, reflecting on events of the week and everything that's been going on in the country with Her Majesty the Queen. All very sad. But yes, it's been a very difficult week, hasn't it?
A strange string of coincidence. And the fact that the Queen was involved with the appointment of a new Prime Minister, and 48 hours after that, we had a new king.
Yeah, yeah. It's incredible, really, isn't it?
It's almost as though, with everything that's going on in the background and the situation in Ukraine, you know, I smiled earlier on when one of our listeners was pleased to have heard Matt Munro doing Born Free. And I thought to myself, it's a good job we didn't play From Russia with Love.
Yes, that's right.
But with everything that's going on in the world, it really is as if, I went and looked it up for you earlier, didn't I? Hamlet actually says, the time is out of joint. The proverb has become the times are out of joint.
Yeah.
But it's very, very much like that. Shakespeare had a word for just about everything. Would you like to move on to yesterday and the service at St. Paul's?
Yes, yes, let's do that. Let's do that.
Because I think a lot of the television coverage yesterday was really vox pops. And that's between all the various guests and the nation who were watching. So really my attention was caught then by the service from St. Paul's. And I know that the King's Address was part of that, but perhaps if I can just refer to the service first, after the King's Address at 6 o'clock, because St. Paul's, I mean, we are so lucky, are we not, that we've got the palaces and ceremonial buildings that have been used this morning as we've been sitting here looking at the Accession Council and what followed, and the fact that we've got St. Paul's and we've got the Abbey and any number of other buildings, ecclesiastical and otherwise, in London. But St. Paul's, on an evening which was still pretty showery and sombre outside, there's a sombre magnificence about St. Paul's, and I'm not quite sure that that applies to the Abbey, which seems to me to be a place of height and light, that wonderful nave and the choir beyond and all that history there. So St. Paul's last night, you know, somberly magnificent, uplifting words in the service, and quite ethereal music, especially the opening rendition by the choir, I thought. And the first hymn, the processional, was All My Hope on God Is Founded. And whether or not you, I, our listeners, have any faith or none, that hymn very clearly referenced Her Late Majesty's deep and unshakable Christian faith, by the principles of which she led her life and acted constantly as head of state.
Well, that's it, and I think you're quite right. That faith guided her throughout her life and throughout her reign as Queen. And you're right about St. Paul's, because it does have there's something very different about St. Paul's. I previously worked very near to St. Paul's and would pass it more or less every day, and no matter how many times you walk up, you can see it, and it does look absolutely magnificent. And I'm pretty sure there's still a law in the city of London which says that when they're building these various high-rise skyscrapers, that certain vantage points, it cannot destroy the view from St Paul's. And they've had to build certain of those buildings with that in mind. But yeah, I mean, that the service last night was incredible, really, when you think how little time they had to get this together and actually put these events out. And you know, it's incredible, really, that in the time scale that they were given, that they were able to organise something which was so moving.
I mentioned tectonic plates shifting. I suppose this is a moment of national watershed, and it occurs to me that St Paul's reflects at least two other national watersheds. In the first place, it's the successor to the previous St Paul's, which burned down in that great turning point, the Great Fire of London, which had the beneficial effect of cleansing the plague from the year before, 1665 and 1666. And in terms of fire, there's the iconic image, isn't there, of St Paul's amid the smoke and flames of the Blitz, which clearly was another total watershed, because the Blitz occurred when Britain stood alone and was led by Churchill, Her Majesty's first Prime Minister. Can you believe...
Well, this is the amazing thing, isn't it, that we go back to that sort of fact that Churchill was her first Prime Minister, Liz Truss was her final Prime Minister, Churchill was born 101 years before Liz Truss. I mean, that tells you everything you need to know about the length of tenure.
And I think that one of Her Majesty's godfathers may have been Viscount Castlereagh, I'm not sure whether the name is right, but he was actually born in 1850. And he was Her Majesty's godfather and would no doubt have spoken to the child. So, yes, all my hope on God is founded, her Christian faith, and in the great cathedral of St Paul's, which last night served to reference yet another national watershed. One of the journalists this morning said that I only really believed what's happened when at the end of the service they sang God Save the King.
Yes, and it is, we are, and I mentioned it earlier on, we are going to have to get used to the new titles, the fact that William and Catherine are Prince and Princess of Wales. You know, Charles is now King Charles, Camilla is Queen Camilla, Queen Consort. You know, there'll be other titles maybe which are bestowed going forward, the Duke of Edinburgh title perhaps, who knows, but it all sounded... I don't like to use the word because it's technically the right word, but it doesn't sound right. But it does sound jarring in the sense that we're not used to this new era, if you like, and we are going to have to get used to it quite quickly.
Unsettling, certainly. Disturbing, yep. Certainly,
definitely.
I think.
Yeah.
Because there is the Queen's image on the coinage, on the banknotes, on all manner of other things. And... yes, God Save the King, and I'm sure that people will get the words wrong the first time the national anthem is sung at a sporting event or whatever. God Save the King, in a way, I think that if we move swiftly to just calling him the King,
yes,
we never ever talked about Queen Elizabeth, let alone Queen Elizabeth II. Queen Elizabeth, the Queen Mother, in the early days, to differentiate two queens with the same name, but it was always just so long as she lived, which wasn't long after the Queen became Queen, but Queen Mary, the widow of George V, again, was referred to as Queen Mary. But quite honestly, the Queen, from a very early stage, has only ever been the Queen. And wherever you went in the world, you knew that however many other queens there may be, when somebody spoke about the Queen, everybody knew whom they meant. Funnily enough, I think it may be in terms of the Prince of Wales that our mind's eye will have difficulty, because it will be very, very hard when William is referred to as the Prince of Wales not to see the previous Prince of Wales in our mind's eye.
Yes, exactly. I think, as you say, these sort of seismic tectonic plates shifting is exactly right. These are all things that we're going to have to come to terms with, and I suppose that's all part of the process of grieving, which I guess we all are in that process. And it's going to be a difficult time for everybody. It was interesting, just going back to the speeches in Parliament before the service at St Paul's earlier in the day, and it was amazing and very touching, I think, as well, that lots of the speeches referred to funny moments that people had had with the Queen, and I think that the first three, certainly one of the first few people that were up were, in order of seniority and previous prime ministers, etc., you have Boris Johnson, Harriet Harman and Theresa May, who all had stories about the Queen which just showed their the side of her which was able to connect with everybody. And you know, Theresa May's story about the cheese, where she dropped the cheese on the floor, put it, had to make a decision, put it back on the plate. When she turned around, the Queen was looking at her and just smiled. Again, it just is everything about the Queen, which she was able to connect with people in such a way that her sense of humour clearly was amazing, really. It was it's fascinating to hear that personal connection she had with people.
Interesting to me as well that so many of the mentions in the House and indeed elsewhere revolved around people who had met Her Late Majesty. There was a figure being bandied around last evening that she may have met 3 million people.
Amazing.
During her reign.
Yes, amazing.
You mentioned what went on in the House. Clearly that was where the whole tsunami was unleashed when the debate was called to a halt. Interesting, I think, that Boris Johnson MP, both in his written statement on the afternoon the Queen died and what he said in the House yesterday, was Boris Johnson MP and not Boris Johnson PM. He reverted to his ability to speak and to write in both those offerings. And we must add that I think the leader of what we must now call His Majesty's Loyal Opposition, and my former pupil, rose to the occasion very well indeed.
Yes, he did. Yes, he did. I think there was lots of speeches made which were on both sides, which were amazing. It was very nice, and it said much for the Queen that even in her passing, she was able to bring sides together which previously had been at loggerheads. When Boris Johnson finished his speech, he was followed by Harriet Harman, who stood up and actually made the point that she was honoured almost to follow his speech, and what an amazing speech he'd made, which I think was a very nice thing to say. It was the same, I think it was either Ian Blackford or Ed Davey, one of the two, followed after Theresa May and said the same thing. And it was very noticeable how, even in her death, the Queen was able to connect to all sides. She never, ever showed her political views. She never took sides, which was why, partly, I guess, people of all political persuasions were able to identify with her so much and feel so much empathy towards her and love for her.
People say that a throwaway remark of hers at the WI may have influenced the outcome of Indy Ref 1, but we're not going down the political road today,
but
are we?
You're right, but it was a very rare thing, and of course she must have had views on things, and I'm sure when she sat with the 15... different prime ministers over her life, well, certainly over her reign, that she would have expressed views and in private with them, and it's one of those things that she was able to give advice because she'd met pretty much everybody that was worth meeting, and she knew all these statesmen. She had vast experience, and some of the anecdotes they talked about, I think there was one of the MPs that said he'd sat with her, and one of the dignitaries had come over from, I think it was from Nigeria, and was at a dinner. And the Queen knew everything. Now, all right, you could say she was well briefed, but again, she made sure she was well briefed, that she was able to have a conversation with this particular leader about the issues in Nigeria, and she knew everything there was to know. And I think that is part of one of the reasons she was such an amazing queen.
I believe it was Harriet Harman, whom you've already mentioned, who alluded to the fact that when she was given the elbow from government, Her Majesty was practically straight on the line,
yes,
inviting her to attend an audience and commiserate. And I know that Ian Duncan Smith said the same about when he was defenestrated.
Yeah, exactly. So she obviously knew, not only was she aware of events going on, but she obviously had that empathy with people, that she knew when they were perhaps suffering a little bit and they needed to speak. I mean, as you say, with Harriet Harman, she said her phone had stopped ringing, nobody was interested in her, she'd been fired, and all of a sudden her office gets a phone call from the Queen.
It's a pity that Her Majesty's capacity for empathy doesn't extend more widely in this day and age. But
exactly.
What an example she set. I think we mentioned the service and we mentioned the King's initial address to the nation. Clearly before that, he'd seen the new Prime Minister, both of them, almost like children wandering lost in the woods in this extraordinary situation, which nobody could have foreseen just 48 hours previously.
No.
And I suppose the fact that Her Majesty held those two audiences almost pointed us away from the fact of what was about to happen. But I think it would be very wrong of us not to think of the King. Taking on board the burdens of being head of state. Clearly, the whole world's media has said he's lost his mother. But taking on board the change to his own life, because he will, as the Queen was, now have to be totally impartial. You know, all of those past prime ministers have been quoted as saying, whenever I went to my weekly audience, I could speak frankly, safe in the knowledge that nothing would ever be leaked.
Yes, yes. Theresa May made reference to that in her speech yesterday as well.
And that was another element of Her Majesty's constancy. I thought that in terms of his address last night, the King got it absolutely spot on. I think it was particularly poignant, and he repeated it this morning in what he said at the Palace of St. James, making reference to the rest of my life. He is clearly aware that at the age of 73, his tenure could be a short one, although if he lives as long as his dad, it won't be. But there was the poignancy, I think, about that, his tributes to his late mother, the fact that he was careful to include the Duke and Duchess of Sussex in what he said, and sending them his love. And I thought that completely spot on was his closing remark about thanks to his late mother, and then the line from Hamlet, and I will quote it in full with "Good night, sweet prince," which obviously was inappropriate for the King last night. It's when Horatio is holding the dying Hamlet in his arms at the end of the play, and the full line is, "Now cracks a noble heart, good night, sweet prince, and flights of angels sing thee to thy rest."
Duty Radio 103.4. Myself, Tim, and David J reflecting on events of this week. And we've had a text in from our own Henry Mack, who's listening. He's parked up right under the Queen Elizabeth Bridge at the moment on the Dartford side. So hello to you, Henry. Glad you're listening. David, I just wanted to quickly reflect on the fact that with Operation Unicorn implemented in Scotland, which is the operation to begin the process of bringing the Queen back to London, ultimately to Windsor via Westminster. At the moment, I believe her coffin is in the ballroom at Balmoral. And a couple of years ago, myself, Mrs. B and my daughter did the tour of Balmoral, and we were in that particular ballroom, which I have to say is an amazing place to be in. And when I heard that on the news that that's where the Queen was resting at the moment, it did make me smile, because the stories that the tour guide told us about the ballroom, where the Queen would hold every year the Gillies Ball, where she would invite local people from the village of Ballater, which is where Balmoral is, and staff from her own estate, and they would have all the different Highland dancing going on at that particular ball. And if you were invited, which most of the locals were, you would often find yourself dancing the Gay Gordons and the White Sergeant and the various other Highland dances with the Queen herself. And she was again able to sort of almost connect with the local people. And there was no airs and graces. Everybody had a good time there. And it was an annual event that she threw for the local people. And again, it just showed how she was able to connect with her neighbours, who were just ordinary people. And she didn't feel as though she had to be above them. She was able to invite them into the ballroom there at Balmoral.
There's going to be much ceremonial in the week, just a little bit more than a week to come.
Indeed. I mean, she's moving, I believe they're moving her from Balmoral either tomorrow or Monday to Holyrood Palace, which again I visited last year with Mrs. B. Another amazing place. Zara Phillips and Mike Tyndall got married there, and her official residence in Scotland is Holyrood Palace. An amazing place, which I have to be honest, I was unaware of the history of that particular palace. Most people probably are aware of Balmoral when the Queen's in Scotland, but her actual official residence is Holyrood Palace, which is again full of the history stretching back for hundreds of years of the royal family.
We've been watching the Accession Council this morning.
Yes, we have.
I think that it's the first time, clearly the only time, it was possible for television cameras to be admitted into that Privy Council meeting at the Palace of St James, and all that exists of the previous occasion is a bit of flickery old black and white Pathé News, God Save the Queen and the Trumpeters, and we've seen that timelessly replicated this morning. And fascinating also to see the great and the good, the members of the Privy Council, some that some of us might not regard as quite so great or quite so good, but that's the nature of things. And to see that process and then the ceremonial outside, and we both said, we do pageantry.
Oh yes, when you watch that, and again referencing what I just said, bear in mind that whilst the plans have been in place for a long time, actually being able to execute them the way we do, nobody does it better. And at the moment, the whole spotlight of the whole world, I would say, is probably on this country and on the pageantry and the pomp and ceremony that we're able to actually carry out. I mean, looking now, we've got the monitor on in the studio behind you, David, and they're showing clips of what we've just seen. Incredible, really, that we are able still to put these events on in such sad circumstances, but nonetheless it creates the continuity between monarchs, from one monarch to the next, and that flow, and the head of state moves from the Queen to the King, and seamlessly, and we're able to put these things on. It's remarkable.
It did make me smile. I only read it on the subtitles, because clearly we haven't got the TV sound turned up here, but one of the presumably quite young commentators on the channel we were watching referred to the proclamation in the courtyard at St James as the newsflash moment 70 years ago when, quote, there was no TV nor any social media. People didn't know what was going on. I suppose it had escaped the commentator that in those days there was the morning press, there was the evening press, three separate newspapers, the Evening News, the Star and the Evening Standard in London, plus the pink edition for the football results on a Saturday afternoon, and there was also a little thing called the radio, which we've remained with.
Exactly right. Unfortunately, I guess, as you say, we don't know. I'm not sure who the commentator was, because we didn't have the sound up. We're both assuming he's a bit younger, but I suppose if I wasn't around at the last coronation, but whoever it was that was commentating perhaps has maybe got a little bit ahead of themselves, not remembering that we did have the medium of radio back then.
Some of us were around at that stage as well, just about. Tim, this has been a pleasure.
Yes, I'm glad that we were able to do this. I know we've lots of things changing anyway here at Susie, and yes, it's going to be a new era in lots of different ways. Strange, really, how it's all happened at the same time.
Yes, the times are out of joint, as Shakespeare didn't say. It's been really and truly, ever since the financial crash in 2008, the foundations of our lives have just continued to be shaken and shaken.
Yeah, it's a remarkable period for various reasons, and it feels as though we've sort of been battered and bruised over the last few years with various things going on. COVID and so on and so forth, and this sort of has come as a bit of a hammer blow, hasn't it, with really to having thought we got starting to get through things, get things back on track. And I think many of the commentators have mentioned this, that we, you know, we all knew how old the Queen was, we knew she was frail, but I don't know about you, but certainly myself, there was part of you that just thought she was going to go on forever.
Oh, absolutely, and that's been referenced as well. And sadly, none of us can do that.
No, no, and it is going to be hard, and we're going to have to get used to it. But yeah, it's one of those things. Life moves on.
Sadly, I don't think that those external circumstances are going to change very much anytime soon. It would be nice to think that Her Majesty's death marked a watershed of that nature, but I think it's going to get worse before it gets better.
Yes, I think you're exactly right, and I think we're going to have to try and bear it. We've seen the King and his speech last night to the nation, and as you said earlier, it was spot on. And hopefully, we'll move forward, and we'll be able to support him and the way we did the Queen.
And we'll hope that the new sandpit and the cat basket will be able to make their contributions to the ongoing history of this little community radio station.
Thank you for coming in. Thank you for your reflections on the Queen. It's been lovely to talk about things in very sad circumstances, but I think we've managed to sort of discuss everything that's been going on.
Susie 103.4.